Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Election Day is on Tuesday, and Bostonians will vote for mayor on that day. WBUR's Edify reporter Max Larkin has been taking a look at education and how it plays out in this mayoral race. And he has covered both Tito Jackson and Marty Walsh's platforms on education, and he's with us now. Good to see you, Max.
Good to see you, Meghna.
Okay, so education has always been an issue in Boston for generations. So how is it playing out in this race?
Yeah, this is actually an anniversary year. It's been 25 years since former Boston Mayor Ray Flynn took mayoral control of the school district, replaced a group of elected school board members and put an appointed school committee in place. Flynn told me that he did it to make sure that parents and educators in the community have a voice in the direction of the district.
You know, I didn't really want control over the schools. You know, I wanted accountability. I just wanted a voice for people who didn't have a voice.
Flynn told me that he did it to make sure, but it had another effect, notionally putting Boston's sitting mayor on the hook for whatever happens in what's a big and complex school district.
So that brings us to today then, because I want to ask you about what do both candidates see as the biggest issues then currently with Boston Public Schools?
Yeah, both candidates share some key concerns. They've got, the same ones you'd see everywhere: achievement gaps, holding back racial minorities, poor quality school buildings, better outcomes, really, in college and in careers. But I think they have differences of approach. Jackson's pushing for a lot more money. He says he'd put $45 million directly into Boston Public Schools, bypassing the central office to pay for the big and small things that principals and teachers want. But that they don't have the money for now. And Walsh, as the incumbent, says he doesn't want to spend taxpayer money, but he does want to expand pre-kindergarten in the city and to basically spend $1 billion to revamp the facilities in the district.
Okay, so you did take a very close look then at the platforms of both candidates regarding Boston Public Schools, and you've reported on it. I want to just go directly to your reported piece on how City Councilor Tito Jackson looks at Boston Public Schools, and basically he calls for more funding. So let's listen to your story.
Waving at cars at the edge of Franklin Park, Tito Jackson is on his home turf.
Thank you.
Jackson grew up less than a mile away in the Grove Hall neighborhood.
Thank you.
But he didn't go to high school in Boston. Born to a 13-year-old mother, he was adopted by parents who decided to take him out of the Boston public schools. Instead, Jackson went to Brookline High School as a Metco student. He graduated in 1993.
What my parents did is what every single parent in Boston is doing, is trying to do the best for their child.
Jackson says that a BPS education still isn't always a pathway to a bright future, no matter who you are.
So the real issue is that a young Martin J. Walsh and a young Tito Jackson wouldn't fare as well in a Walsh administration based on the funding that's currently happening.
School funding is at the center of the Jackson campaign. He emerged as a leading advocate for more spending on public schools in last year's debate over Question 2, which would have lifted a statewide cap on charter schools. Here he is at a Radio Boston debate last fall.
We should be coming together, as we started in 1993, to actually bring up all schools and all children and leave no child behind.
Question 2 went down in defeat by a nearly 2-1 margin. It was a major victory for Jackson, and he's been making the case for more spending ever since. Jackson says that if elected mayor, he'd reallocate $45 million directly to public schools in Boston. It's a big amount of money, on the heels of what was already a large infusion in last year's budget. Jackson says it would allow schools to add staff members sometimes seen as inessential, like computer science teachers, nurses, and social workers. But supporters of Mayor Walsh say it's not that simple.
More money is not alone going to do the trick, because we already spend so much and don't get the kind of return on that investment that we should get.
That's Marty Walls, a former state legislator who was on the other side of the charter debate last year. She points to a chart that shows Boston spends around $20,000 per pupil, markedly more than most of the nation's biggest school districts, and second only to New York. And yet, she says about half of all BPS students attend schools that the state has labeled as underperforming. So while she supports increased funding, Wall says the district also has to change its ways to better serve low-income students and English language learners.
How do we do a better job educating the kids who are hard to educate? That's the duty of adults, is to figure this out.
City data show that BPS's funding has actually gone up by a little over 5% in the last 5 years. It now accounts for more than a third of the city's budget. But Jackson and his supporters respond with data of their own. Since 2012, BPS has relied on a formula in which the district's money follows its students. That means as enrollment drops at a given school, it can create a kind of death spiral: less funding, dwindling staff, and many students stuck there all the same. So says Kristen Johnson, a BPS parent who's supporting Jackson.
Our teacher gets cut. They lose half a nurse. They lose their music. They lose their AP classes. It's an issue of quality and equity.
About half of Boston Public Schools have fewer teachers than they did when Walsh took office in 2014. Most have no working library. And around 50 schools will see cuts this year, many of them housing especially high-needs populations. Even the district concedes that recent funding decisions have been difficult. In a letter sent home to families last year, BPS Superintendent Tommy Chang blamed state and federal aid, which hasn't kept up with rising costs. But Jackson says he learned a lesson going to school in wealthier Brookline. Its citizens voted overwhelmingly to approve higher taxes to pay for education just 2 years ago.
And what I learned from Brookline is that's a school system where when money runs out, they make it work.
City Councilor Tito Jackson there in a story from WBUR's Max Larkin. And Max, as you had said before, Tito Jackson went to school in Brookline through the Metco program.
He did.
So it's an interesting sort of counterpoint here. But Max, I'm curious. So Councilor Jackson has talked for a long time about getting more money to Boston schools. Does he have a plan for where that money is going to come from?
I think he sort of does. And he released what he called the People's Budget, and he said that he was going to direct more than, as I said, about $40 million out of projected increases in property taxes. So you got people moving into nicer buildings in the city. You're assessing a larger tax bill, and take about half of that and put it right into the schools. That's the idea.
Okay. So funding is sort of one piece of the puzzle here. And obviously it's an important one because Boston Public Schools are the single largest part of the city's budget. But, you know, as you touched on in your earlier piece there with Councilor Jackson, there's this issue of the persistent achievement gap in BPS schools, and that the schools are not serving English language learners as much as they can or should be, or students with disabilities. I mean, how do Walsh or Jackson and Walsh plan to address those issues?
Well, first of all, they're not promising to solve them all in their first term. They're big, intractable problems.
Yeah, there are no magic wands.
Yeah,
right?
Every urban district faces those issues. But they do have their ideas. Walsh is betting on a body of academic research that says pre-kindergarten is the place to make the investment. Any dollar that you spend there will pay dividends down the line. He hasn't delivered on all of these high-quality pre-kindergarten seats, but he thinks that could make a difference in the quality of high school students and how they how they handle school. Jackson would go, I think, more comprehensively. He wants to end excessive discipline, suspensions, and expulsions for young children. He wants better youth jobs, MBTA passes, and then alongside a discretionary spend of $45 million, a big infusion of cash.
Okay. So we heard your piece there that went into detail with Councilor Jackson's sort of view on education. You did the same for Marty Walsh's platform and record on education. So let's listen to that.
It's a cold morning in Boston's Seaport District, but at the annual Ed Vester's Prize Breakfast in the Westin Hotel Ballroom, the mood is all warmth. The event is a love fest, celebrating excellent principals, teachers, and philanthropists, too. Then the guest of honor, Mayor Marty Walsh. Prize panel chair Jim Stone lists Walsh's educational accomplishments, like longer school days at about half of BPS schools, and a summer learning program. But most of all, Stone praises the mayor's consensus-driven approach.
He's done all this always by building alliances rather than pitting one side against the other.
As Walsh takes the stage with Election Day on the horizon, he's grateful for the compliment.
Thank you. Let me thank Jim. Thank you. I need to borrow you for the next 6 days.
As warring factions argue about the future of Boston Public Schools, its reputation as a top urban school district can sometimes be drowned out. But BPS does face big challenges, and little agreement about how to fix them.
But full participant in, you know, one of the great problems facing our nation, which is the failure to unlock the potential of black and brown children.
That's Paul Grogan. He's the president of the Boston Foundation, a nonprofit group that supports charter schools and education reform. Grogan believes the BPS budget is bloated by excess staff and capacity, and that the district has to downsize before it can thrive. But he says he understands why Mayor Walsh has avoided making those deep cuts so far.
Now, closing schools is, in the political world, a very unattractive thing. Even terrible schools, it turns out, have some defenders.
Grogan says he hopes that in a second term, Walsh might take more decisive action against schools seen as failing. But teachers at one such school couldn't disagree more. Martha Boysell has taught English as a second language at Brighton High School for 14 years. It's the end of the day, and the school feels empty. In the past 5 years, its enrollment has dropped from around 1,100 students to fewer than 700.
Did you find the school okay? On it.
Its test scores have dropped as well, and last year, the State Board of Education designated Brighton as an underperforming Level 4 school. Following district policy, teachers were asked to reapply for their jobs or leave Brighton High. Boysell was one of the few to return. She says that fall from grace does weigh on her.
It really depends on the day. Some days you feel hopeful and some days you feel completely devastated.
During her time there, she says Brighton's student body has changed dramatically. More recent immigrants, more students who are homeless or suffer from learning disabilities. They're wonderful kids, Boysell says, but ones that need more resources to educate, not fewer. Boysell says that in effect, the state has punished Brighton High for changes out of its control, and that the city hasn't picked up the slack. Mayor Walsh visited Boysell's classroom on the first day of school this year, but she didn't have a chance to make Brighton's case.
I would love to sit down and talk to the mayor about this. It's been hard to figure out who do we go to advocate for our students.
Walsh remembers that visit well. Back at the Westin Hotel, he rattles off facts about the population at Brighton High.
44% of the kids in Brighton High are English language learners, and if you look at the kids that took the 10th grade MCAS, many of those were brand new into the country, into the school. And by the time they were 12th graders, they were speaking proficiently in English.
He faults the state for failing to recognize that progress or provide the district with sufficient aid. Walsh has said he isn't planning to close schools like Brighton High, even if students flee for greener pastures. In a second term, he hopes to use special turnaround grants and a $1 billion rebuilding plan to bring new life back to those schools. But he's not letting them off the hook, either.
You can't continue to fund schools that are losing enrollment at high levels. Throwing money at a situation and not fixing the problem is not the answer.
It's a middle ground, one that leaves Walsh open to criticism from across the political spectrum.
I mean, again, everyone wants more.
That's the challenge for an incumbent mayor. Everyone does want more for Boston Public Schools. More funding, more accountability, and more progress. And all at the same time.
That's from WBUR's Max Larkin here. Max, one last question for you. I mean, we've been talking about education, always an important issue for the city, but how important is it in this election?
I think I'd turn your attention to the WBUR poll that shows that it's flipped places in the last 4 years. Used to be everyone's top issue, or a quarter of voters' top issue. Now that's housing. So it may not be driving this one quite as much as it did last time.
Ah, interesting. Well, WBUR's Max Larkin there bringing us the multiple views about education in the mayoral election in Boston. Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Magda.
We'll be back.